Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening.
Good evening.
When we first come to this practice, it can be very confusing and can create some anxiety. It can be a little disorienting, not just because this practice has a tradition in totally different culture than here in the West. Many, many centuries in Asia, you know, Japan, China, Korea, India. So this practice that was nurtured in traditions not familiar to us can seem quite unfamiliar and confusing. But not only that, this practice has a way of seeing the world as a worldview that's much different than the tradition here in the West. So we come across this practice and we are drawn to it, and we're touched by it, but it takes a while to get a feel for it and to feel at home with it. When I first discovered this practice many years ago, I was very excited because I felt it answered a lot of questions that I was having, not about my own life, but about what we were doing in this culture. It seemed to have answers to these very basic questions. And I felt, in a way, it was perfect. Oh, this is just right. Wow. This spiritual practice will provide all the answers. And so I had a sense, this is the way to orient my life. This is the way we should orient our lives. And I was pretty enthusiastic, pretty excited. I wanted to live this practice. I wanted to expand it. I wanted to make it available to others. I felt like a missionary, I guess. But in those first days, months, even years, the startup was not easy for me. I was disoriented and confused, and it was because I started to feel my own limitations. You know, I had met Suzuki Roshi, who brought the practice here from Japan, and he was quite inspiring. Everybody, all of us who met him said, "This is, aren't we lucky to meet this person?" He was inspiring. He was a good role model for those of us in this culture who were a little bit confused by modern American life. He seemed very natural, balanced. He was energetic. He was always present. I had this sense, oh, this fellow, he's perfect. But I had the feeling that I could never do what he's doing. How can I help him? I could never do what he's doing. I have too many faults. I have too many imperfections. I could never do what he's doing. I had a lot of doubts about myself as I was trying to embrace this practice. I had such negative ideas as, who do I think I am? What arrogance I have to think I can help him. To think that I can be like him. I was pretty confused. So I gave up any idea, at that time I gave up any idea of actively, of being able to actively help this practice. I wasn't up to it. Maybe it's because we put him on too high of a pedestal. I was confused by a mixture of enthusiasm and doubt. But after some time, I came to the realization that I don't need to be perfect. I told myself, just go ahead with the practice. You don't need to be perfect. Go ahead and learn what it's all about. If it's confusing, that's okay. Go ahead. It'll resolve. Don't worry about imperfections, so-called imperfections. Don't worry about it. Just continue the practice by paying attention and without judging. And when I came to this realization, I said to myself, well, that's so obvious. Of course. Why didn't I see that? Why did I spend so many months and years not seeing that? It's so obvious. Why didn't I think of that before? And then I thought, is it possible the practice helped me realize that, that blind spot? So I was confused even more. what's going on here? So if you come to practice, when you're new to practice and you have some doubts and questions and concerns, don't worry. It's normal, it's natural, and it's not a bad thing. Because, you know, perfection, having perfection in this practice is not the point. Absolutely not the point. And I thought Suzuki Roshi was perfect, and that was not the point. Oh, look, I found this perfect teacher. Not the point. And the net of all that is trying to attain perfection is a big misunderstanding. And sometimes people come to the practice with that in mind. I'm going to polish myself and become perfect. And there's a famous story about it. About polishing a stone. Well, save that for another time. Trying to be perfect is a misunderstanding. And as it turns out, the imperfections we feel in our life become the basis of our practice. So the gateway to understanding. Difficulties, having difficulties, experiencing difficulties in our practice and in our life is very necessary. It's inevitable and necessary. And so in Zen practice we say those are our gifts. So when we practice in the midst of difficulties and imperfections, we can feel the meaning of our life. We can feel its deepest meaning and its texture. Practicing with difficulties is how we can appreciate the continuous nature of things. The continuous, ever-present nature of things in the midst of change. And we can appreciate how things relate to each other in the deepest sense. Usually when we think about things or people relating to each other, we consider it, it's like some sort of collision. And we want our relationships to be a smooth collision, you know, like this. Not a collision, but a blending. And we hope the relationship is not like this. But our practice enables us to see how we relate. So when we face difficulties that come up and shortcomings in ourselves that we feel might be our imperfections, we can appreciate the life we have and all the things in our life. How these things and people, how we relate to each other. And we can also see, and what's most instructive is, we can see how we relate to changes. How does that work? And what is our response when things change? If it's like if you're in a storm and you let your face be in the wind and the rain. That's the only way you can know the nature of the wind and the rain. If we are always protecting our face when the wind and the rain appear, how will we know them? And when difficulties appear, if we turn ourselves away, how will we know ourselves? So the spirit of our practice is expressed in the attitude we have that says, I am here and I am ready for whatever comes. So we continue our practice, we continue our sitting, even at the times we don't feel so good, or we're having some difficulty, or there's some problem we need to take care of, or our situation is not perfect. In other words, when we practice in the midst of those things, it means we are not turning our face away. We are learning how to accept the flow of life without judgment. Several years ago, many, many years ago, there was a student here, a member here, somebody who attended Kanado on a regular basis. He was always talking about the problems he had in his workplace, constantly, always on his mind. He would say, it's necessary for me to be ambitious and aggressive at work. I have to be competitive to succeed. If I don't meet my goals, I will get fired. And then what will I do? And he said, this meditation practice does not make sense in the everyday world. And he was always talking about such concerns and difficulties, and eventually he just stopped attending. He didn't understand, he could not trust that difficulties that he faced were actually his practice. And you may also hear such statements like, type A people cannot accept this practice because they are too energetic and too busy. And this is a mistaken idea. To say there are only certain kinds of people that can have a spiritual practice. It's like saying type A people don't have spirituality. So this is a short-sighted idea, because Zazen practice does not diminish our intellect, does not get in the way of our thinking processes. If we have a Zazen practice, it won't cause us to lose our vision or be less effective in the world. It won't cause us to zone out, like somebody once told me. It won't cause us to zone out. By contrast, Zazen allows our capacities and our capabilities to be used completely, to be used fully. That does not diminish them. Our practice enables our intuition and the accumulation of our experiences to help us with problems and to help us with our understanding. I remember a question that was presented to me about 20 years ago when I was speaking someplace. Somebody said, can Zazen mind and analytical mind exist in the same skull? Not a bad question. Good question. And of course, the answer is, of course. And of course, it's very necessary. It's natural and it's necessary that our intellectual analytical capacities share the same space with our Zazen mind. Cohabit. Because it's necessary. Not only is it true, but it's necessary, and it's important that we acknowledge it and understand it. Because if we rely only on our intellectual capacity, if we rely only on our analytical ability, we will not trust our intuition. We'll be so overwhelmed by our intelligence that we won't trust our intuition. And we will lose the benefit of our accumulated experience. And if we rely too much on the idea of success, we will be very impatient in our life. And we will not be able to see things as they are. It is necessary for us to make space in our mind for both our everyday analytical intellectual side as well as our Zazen mind, our spiritual side. And in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Satsuki Roshi had something to say about that. And he refers to Bodhidharma, who came to China from India and actually founded Zen practice. And Bodhidharma came into a culture that was Buddhism in China, but it was very intellectual and it was for the royalty. And he brought a different way of seeing the world. So So Suzuki Roshi says that before Bodhidharma, the study of Buddha's teaching resulted in a deep and lofty philosophy of Buddhism, and people tried to attain its high ideals. This is a mistake. Bodhidharma discovered that it was a mistake to create some lofty or deep idea and then try to attain it by the practice of Zazen. If that is our Zazen, it is nothing different from our usual activity or monkey mind. It looks like a very good, a very lofty and holy activity, but actually there is no difference between it and our monkey mind. This is the point that Bodhidharma emphasized. So when I projected onto Suzuki Roshi a kind of perfection, his perfection was not about him reaching a stage of perfection. His appeal and his inspiration came from his practice that was steady and constant and very encouraging to be around him. His personal perfection was not important. It was his steady, continuous practice that was important. And this is the Bodhisattva way. And everyone, each of us, can have this practice. There is no need to become a perfect person. I think that very few of us will accomplish something in our life that the world will say, that's great. What a great accomplishment. She's a genius. He's wonderful. Very few of us. The world won't say that about many of us. Very few of us will be able to do something that people will say that about us. And that's okay. Because that's not the point of our life. That's not the point of our practice. To be recognized as something perfect. The point is, the point of our effort should be to continue our practice without any idea of greatness. This is the selfless attitude of the Bodhisattva, and this is the practice that Suzuki Roshi showed us when he came here so many years ago. And when we have this selfless practice, that's how we can help him and achieve what it is he tried to do. And at the same time, that's how we help each other. So we simply, each of us, take care of whatever we can, big or small. In fact, if we are concerned with ideas of big or small, it will be difficult for us to take care of anything in a very fundamental sense. In our lives, problems will persist for us only when we don't have an attitude of simply taking care of them, when we want to achieve something and be known for something. So in Buddhism, we have what's known as the three treasures. And the third of those three treasures is called the Sangha, which is a community. But it's more than just a physical collection of us being together in a community. It is a particular principle. It is an important principle of Buddhism, the idea of Sangha. In the Sangha, everyone has something to take care of that benefits each other. Sometimes the things we take care of are big, sometimes they're small, but it makes no difference. So if a problem appears, the Sangha is always ready. And creating a group of like-minded people who want to practice together, creating a Sangha, is the most important aspect of planting Buddhism wherever we are. So we practice in the midst of imperfections, in ourselves and in the world. We practice in the midst of them. We practice in the midst of difficulties. And we practice ready to meet whatever it is that arises. Does anyone have a question?
I was wondering that we have different levels of thinking, and like when we sit in Zazen, it's like we're observing our lower level of thinking and seeing what we're doing. So how many levels of thinking do we have, and what's that about?
No levels. It's just thinking.
What is that thing that is observing us thinking?
Something observing you?
It's almost as if there's another me which is observing me.
Oh, and you think then there is an observer observing that observer?
Yeah.
Oh. Out to infinity?
Not recursive, just at least one level looking at me thinking. Or not thinking, just observing.
Does the rain care if anything is observing it? Does the wind care if anything is observing it? It's just the wind and just the rain, being wind and being rain. So just be you. No need to worry about who's watching or if there are any levels. Just express yourself without judging or analyzing. This is the best way. Thank you.
Thank you. You mentioned very early on that you initially asked yourself who you think you are. And I'd just like to ask if you feel any closer to the answer to that question after this time, and if you still ask yourself that question routinely.
I do know that I am not who I thought I was. And I cannot say who it is that I am. But I do know that who I am is not separate from everybody else.
Thank you.
Yes?
How can we know or be sure when our intuition is rising up and not a thought or not something else?
We have to pay careful attention to that feeling or that sensation or that inclination and try to make sure that we are not fooling ourselves. And there's no guarantee that we will always be successful. But we should always look carefully at those feelings and emotions and flashes that appear and try to determine, is this natural, is this real, or is somehow is this being made up? We have to pay careful attention to ourselves. That's the best way to know. Thank you.
You said I think you said that if we want to experience the wind or the rain, we have to put our faces into the wind or the rain, and that if we want to, and that to look away from the challenges that we face is to not experience ourselves. And I'm not sure that I got that quite right, but the thought that I had when you said that was, are we the same thing as our challenge? Or are we our challenge? Or our difficulty?
We have to share our life with difficulties and challenges. And so in that way, we are not different. When we share ourselves intimately with problems that arise, then we are not different than the problems that arise. We become very intimate. And this intimacy enables us to take care of them. Without the intimacy, they stay troublesome indefinitely. Thank you. Good evening, Anna.
Thank you for your talk, Les. Why do you think we feel resistance to things?
We are always at risk of being too self-absorbed in the idea of ourself. In short, ego. I think ego is why we fight and resist and push back on things that come to us looking for help. We feel we are too special to be bothered by this problem. And this kind of attitude gets in the way of an intimacy with the things of our life. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's KANNONDO.org.